And I came home and announced to my parents that I wanted to coach. And I think when I'd announced to them before that I wanted to take a degree in Russian studies so that I could be a spy, they were like, okay, you just carry on. So when I announced that I wanted to coach, they were like, okay, that sounds more realistic. So that, you need to get trained, you need to get certified. Let's do this. And I remember my dad asking me what, once I was coaching for a few years, what is your goal as a coach? And I said, I would really, my dream is to have a rider one day finish in the top three at a training level competition. And he was like, yeah, then figure out how you're going to get there and, run at the wall, give it heck.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade. Something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. In talking with Ruth Allam for this episode, it struck me that her passion for coaching and helping equestrians prepare to be their best is very much like my mission as a life coach. We're both driven to find what makes people good and help them become great. Ruth has been on an amazing career arc for a long time, and the trajectory only keeps pointing higher. In addition to her work at her Oakhurst Farms operation, Ruth has her fingerprints on a multitude of aspects, not the least of which is helping to shape the future of equestrian coaching in Canada. As a certified EC coach evaluator, just one of many designations she holds from the National Governing Body for Canada, Ruth's work is pointing the ship and setting a higher standard for young riders and coaches alike. I was equally amazed and intrigued by her dedication, her attention to detail, and her drive to make sure all the little things amount to big things. We chatted about her opportunity to coach and work with fellow coaches and the conversations that come out of that. And for the devotion that is required to become an elite rider, she talks about how it's just as important to be investing in the other side of that ledger to maintain a healthy balance in life. A self-confessed journaling addict, Ruth is open and forthcoming with her work in the equestrian world, as you would want a coach's coach to be. We talk about her work with the Grit program, how you need to plan out as much of your training approach ahead of time as you can, vacations to Africa included, and what the New Zealand All Blacks have taught her. I can tell you that this is one of my most enjoyable conversations to date, but I want you to grab a tea, get comfy, and really tune into what Ruth has to say. Consider this an investment in yourself that will pay dividends now and well into the future. It's the final episode for 2023, so let's get a leg up on the year-end inspiration that awaits us. Ruth Allam, the floor is yours. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. All right, well, welcome back to Hitting Your Stride, everyone. And today I have with me Ruth Allam. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Awesome. It's great to have you here. How are you doing after a long season? Are you recouping?
Yeah, absolutely. Excited for the holidays.
Very good. Awesome. All right, Ruth. So you have a very distinguished career as a coach, but I want you to take us back to when you first got in the saddle yourself. Tell me what the lure to horses was and how it helped instill the drive you have inside you still.
So it's a great question, Tracy. And it is a question that I ask my athletes and coaches that I work with to get a better understanding of their original motivation to be in the sport and to carry on when days are hard. The truth is, so actually my sister Helen was the one who wanted to start riding. It wasn't me at all. And as a devoted little sister, I just followed suit and never looked back. In fact, the cool part is that my sister and I, we still work together at the farm. We both coach here and we work on a bunch of coaching projects together. So we get to share our passion together, which is, I think I'm really lucky to have that. So since then, horses have been this grounding feature in my life. They remind me really to move with empathy and respect for everybody that is around me in my life. And you know, I'm always struck by the fact that they're the most amazing teachers. They teach discipline, confidence, resilience, definitely humbleness. They give us gifts constantly if we're just willing to look at them. Yeah, so that's how I got started.
Wow. So are you and your sister close in age?
2 years apart. She's 2 years
Okay.
old.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what a great way and like a great connection to have with a sibling and a family member. So would you say Oakhurst Farm is a family-based place? Like, are your parents involved at all with your farm?
So interestingly, my mom, who is in her mid-70s, still does all of the bookkeeping for us, all the invoicing. My sister does all of our social media, any of the competition work, all the administration for that, and does some coaching for us. My husband and I actually live on the farm. My son is away at vet school, but he's actually home for the holidays right now. And my daughter lives on the farm and works with us. So family is, yeah, I mean, it is a family operation for sure.
Wow, I love that. And it's back to what you were saying about the things that the horses teach you. What you said about showing, like teaching us the empathy or connecting us with empathy and how we move around not just the horses, but what I'm thinking you were saying was also each other, like basically how we move through life. That's fascinating. And that's a deeper thought that I don't know if everybody might have. How can you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I think it is one of the things when I watch kids come into a riding program, understanding how they react and the reaction they're going to get back, I think it is a riding lesson. It is a tool that we use when we work with horses. It's a life lesson. Understanding what their body language is going to do to someone else, what they say and how it's going to impact someone else. I really firm believer in what you put out there is what you're going to get back. So I think that lesson for a lot of kids starting in the sport, and you know, I do also have adult amateurs who ride because it's a release for them from their daily life, and I think it grounds them in just looking at how they are, and then. You know, I mean, horses are great mirrors, right? If you're having an absolutely terrible day, your ride normally doesn't go the best, and you have to, you know, we work with this great sports psychologist who talks to us all the time about the fact that we can't change the things that happen to us, and we can't control them, but we absolutely can control how we react to them, and I think that's one of the things that horses has given me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yes, they teach us wonderful skills that, you know, that can be relatable through all areas of our
Yeah,
lives, for
definitely.
sure. All right, so you've been active in coaching for over 30 years and have had the opportunity to see a lot of different horse and rider combinations. So what do the successful ones have in common with each other that sets them apart from the rest of the pack?
So obviously a question that I thank you for bringing up 30 years. I just had a big birthday. So yeah, 30 years.
Isn't
I
that awesome?
You know, I think of myself as 25, so it's yes, I've been doing this for 30 years. Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. And as I do some of the other work in my life, I think about and have to put on paper sometimes the skills and the attributes that make a successful rider. To answer that question, I'd love to tell you a story.
Sure.
Okay, so the very first kid that I had go to the North American Young Rider Championships, he started riding with me. He'd never been on a horse before, And so I started him. His two sisters were already riding with me. I legitimately, the first time he got on a horse, I did say to his dad, "Have you thought about hockey? Or just a different, maybe not riding." I actually, and he went on to go to two North American Young Rider Championships. He competed at the intermediate level eventing, but there was no way I thought, based on how awkward and uncoordinated and slightly mechanical, he was on a horse. It took me forever to teach him things that other kids would have picked up really quickly. We used to joke that, and he's well aware that I mean, these are conversations I've had with him. Trying to teach him to rising trot, I must have stood in the middle of the arena for months, just yelling up, down, and it seemed very foreign to him. He did start eventing a couple of years later. He got lost on every single cross-country course we sent him out on. He forgot dressage tests. He went off course in show jumping. So it kind of forced me to find new tools to help him remember his tracks, remember all the little nuances of the sport. But once he learned them, they were really learned, which was pretty cool. When he came to me and said that he wanted to try for a spot on the Ontario Young Riders team, I knew that we had to find the right equine partner to balance out his weaknesses and his strengths. And his parents were so good about the whole process, and they were right there all the way. And we found an amazing horse for him, and they were excellent partners. And not only did he make the Ontario team the next year, he went on to be the top placed Canadian at that Young Riders. The things for me when I try to nail down what made it happen for him, the things that kind of set him apart, really like mental resilience. With every single setback, he actually came back stronger. Support was just like, I would love to say it was all financial support, but it wasn't. Very hardworking family. But his family were there with him every step of the way. His older sister groomed for him. His dad was the driver. His mom organized every single part of us going to those big, big horse shows. And his little sister came to every competition and she cheered and just sort of helped in every other way. Empathy, his horses absolutely came first. He was devoted to them. And then coachability and passion. He was a very, very coachable young man. He really wanted to be great. So all the advice and help that we could get him, he was right there just, soaking it in. So notice how I never said raw talent. He was certainly athletic enough to do the job, but I never really believed that that's what got him there. I think the other attributes are what got him there. And those sometimes are those weird, slightly intangible things that are super hard to nail down, when we just watch someone ride. And once you kind of see them, you have to foster them a little bit and help them grow a little bit. And in my opinion, that's what makes someone successful in the sport.
Wow, what a great story. And the whole mental resilience, as soon as you said that, the first thing that came to my mind was, so this young man, like you said, like you'd coach him, he would go away, he would process, he would come back. Ultimately, he never took anything that you advised him on personally,
Nope,
right?
never. Yep.
And in my world of equine massage therapy as a massage therapist, there's a lot of stuff that I see where, perhaps students of all ages, but maybe of the younger kind. I don't know how many years ago your experience was with this young man, but it's so easy to take things personally when someone's just trying to give you a constructive criticism.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very much of the collaborative coaching kind of realm. That's where I like to work. And I would say being a and I don't want to say partner because there are times that I have to be authoritative. If it's a safety issue, I'm very quick to make sure that I, am authoritative enough that I can make sure you're safe. But very much setting the goals along with the athletes and making sure that they're very much invested in their pathway. And I think for him, that worked really, really well.
Nice. Okay. And may I ask how long ago this young
Yeah.
gentleman was?
So I absolutely, it was 2001.
Oh, wow.
And
Okay.
that was the first, and he was barely 16.
Aw.
So yeah. And
Wow.
he and his family run a feed mill. They still have horses on a farm. I don't believe he rides at all. He's, one of those genius, brilliant humans that's good at other things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, what an experience that was for both of you. That's kind of cool. Yeah. All righty. So, where does the challenge in coaching lie for you, given the high level of talent and perhaps expectation you find yourself dealing with?
So in that, obviously great, great topic for me. That the challenge for me is this amazing opportunity, and one of the projects that I'm currently working on is I'm working with Equestrian Canada's Competition Development or HP1 coaching cohort, and being a coach developer, which is what the term that the National Coaching Certification Program terms learning facilitators and coach evaluators, it's coaching, but it's in a little bit different light. So the coaches that come into that program come with this vast level of experience and knowledge, a high level of motivation, and an incredible amount of drive. And part of what I do in that program, part is sort of facilitation and delivery of materials. And part of it is making sure that they see any potential gaps in their program to help them fill those gaps before they go to a final panel presentation to deliver their program to a panel of coach evaluators and multi-sport subject matter experts. And I tell you, nobody wants to have their gaps exposed.
Right.
And especially someone that's been working as a coach for a lot of years, they've been very successful. So, and vulnerability in this business, as I'm sure it is in many others, is really that is a sign of weakness. So, working with those coaches that I have this huge admiration for, that they've been brave enough to come to the table, take up the challenge of being the best that they can for their athletes in continued education. I mean, that is it is a challenge, it's an opportunity, and I'm very grateful to be able to work on a project like that. But then I go back to what I said earlier. It reminds me on a daily basis to really move with empathy and respect when I guide them on their journey. So that's something that that challenge and a new challenge for me really in coaching, working with the coaches and coaching has been pretty cool. It's been a lot of fun.
So, what's the age range of these coaches that you're helping to coach?
Oh, that's a great question. So I would say the youngest that we've had come into the program is a sort of very late 20s, and the oldest is probably mid 60s.
Wow.
And varying degrees of where they meet you in terms of their structured coaching, multi-sport coaching knowledge, so much depth in terms of what they've done. So then making sure that they can present their program in a way that is, encompassing a very holistic coaching view that works within our Coach Association of Canada is just it's fascinating, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great privilege to work with some of these coaches. And what I feel so grateful for is the amount that I learned through the whole process, and I'm sure they learn a lot. I know I learn a ton through the process, so which is pretty cool as well.
That is so cool. I was just going to say, that the amount that you must learn would be so fascinating because, I mean, that's part of what you, it would be an honor to do what you do. And I can totally see what you mentioned about them being vulnerable, especially the more mature coaches in the program, because they've obviously have the chops to be there, to have done it, and the willingness to learn a little bit more. So, I mean, you already have, like, do you know what I mean? It would be so easy to learn from them while
Yeah.
you're still trying to guide them. That would be so cool.
Well, and we get this so within the cohort, we have multi-sport courses delivered by a non-equestrian learning facilitator that comes to us from Coach Association of Canada. And watching the coaches assimilate the information that comes from that multi-sport perspective and being able to embed it into their programs and enrich their programs is it's amazing. Yeah, very, very cool. And so I know there's a lot of pushback in terms of sort of mandatory certification and the opportunity there to get to work within a group of coaches and just think about yourself as a coach. I do lots of things in my day. I muck stalls, I ride horses, I turn out horses, I hold horses, I work with athletes, I work on the computer, I do paperwork. But to just be able to chunk out time in my life to be a coach and think like a coach, it's pretty cool.
Wow. That would be very rewarding. I think that would be for someone like I absolutely love knowledge and acquiring it and learning more. So it sounds like something I would thoroughly enjoy.
You know what, you would, and the conversations that come out of it are pretty awesome.
Wow.
And we do bring them together in person. They're from all across Canada. And we work with a group of up to 16 every year. And we've done 3 years in a row now. So we're just finishing off year three. And we bring them together. So everything's virtual until the sort of final piece, and we bring them together as a group. And it's like they've been together for years, at that point. They really know each other very well, and they understand each other really well, which is, it's pretty awesome.
That's great. And such a great thing for the sports, for equestrian sports to have a bunch of
Yeah.
coaches that are all sort of on the same level working towards the same goals.
Yep. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
All right. So, Ruth, which part of 3-day eventing do you find riders typically find the most challenging to improve as they rise through the competitive levels? And how often do you find yourself having to come up with something creative and new to help them learn and adapt their riding to succeed?
So I think, and it's interesting. I think every athlete struggles a little bit in one area or another, but I would say it's split 50-50 between dressage and show jumping. And I think part of that is that most event riders are event riders because they enjoy going cross country. Otherwise, they'd go and be a dressage rider or they'd go and be a show jumper. So I think really that split between dressage and show jumping is where the struggle sometimes lies. Now, I'm very, very lucky that right across the road from me is a hunter jumper facility, and they run a whole summer full of dressage shows and hunter jumper shows. So we have this facility that's a 5-minute hack away from us that is set up most of the year in sort of competition mode. So I'm able to take my students over there and either go over and school in the dressage ring or go and do a test at a dressage show or go and, school in the jumper ring or go and ride in a jumper class. So we get to cross train all the time and whenever it's really necessary. So when we're doing our yearly training plans, We build in those either modeled competition or training competition scenarios so that we're addressing that all the time.
So do these yearly training plans, do you have one of these for each student you have?
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad you're talking about yearly training plans. I know this is for everyone that knows me. Yearly training plans are something that I am passionate about. So
Nice.
I teach a couple of courses through Equestrian Canada called one is Design a Sport Program, and the next one is Performance Planning for High Performance. And they're both about how to develop your yearly training plan. So each of my students has a yearly training plan, and what I do is I teach them how to build a yearly training plan. Now it's not as in-depth as the one that our high performance coaches are using, but it's got sort of the logistics in it. It's got vet and farrier and all the sort of ancillary pieces in there that a horse and rider would need. And it's got basic themes for each training block in the year. Once I've taught them to do it, then they pretty much like I even have right now, we're not having our preseason meeting with my athletes until January, but I know right now, if I were to do a show of hands to my students who's got their YTP done, I know that there's probably half a dozen that are already done and just ready to show it to me, which is it's a nice way to do it because then it's their idea that they've done, they're invested. And then we can go in and we can tweak it. We can look at why they've put things in different places, and we can then, modify as needed, add, take away. But it really makes sure that they're invested in making sure that they have built in rest and recovery for themselves, rest and recovery for the horse. And then enough qualifying results that if they are looking to go to an FEI, they've built in enough time and enough training opportunity to do that. So,
Okay. Yeah, that's something I was just going to ask you about, what is exactly involved in one of these YTPs, because and I love that you mentioned, rest and recovery for both horse and rider. But do they look at the year ahead of what the different events and the shows are and where they want to go? And then, the rest and recovery, is there anything else that you have them consider when they're making up their yearly training plan?
yeah, absolutely. And they so looking at sort of the and when we use sort of YTP language of periodization, so when I'm gonna to target train aerobic versus strength capacities and stuff like that, that's really my consideration as a coach. For them, I want them then to go and budget. And if I've got kids that are working with parent budgets, then it's a conversation we all get to have, Now, how much is all this going to cost? Oh, maybe I should pull some of this out. Maybe I should think about this. And it makes them a little bit responsible for that kind of planning as well. And they put, and I, a few years ago, it was funny. I had a student come to me and she'd done her YTP and she came and there were definitely almost tears about to happen. And she said to me, "You're never going to believe it. My parents want to do a family vacation to Africa right in the middle of August. It messes up my whole yearly training plan." And I said to her, "Okay, hang on. Your parents want to go do a family trip to Africa. Let's put it in here and let's build the season around it so that it's appropriate. But you have to be a balanced human as well as being a rider. So let's put it in and we can work around it." So I encourage them to do things like that and exams, and prom and things that are important life things need to go in that yearly training plan as well. So yeah, it is about the riding and what they're going to train and what the horse is going to train, but I get to do that for them. I need them to put in all the other things as well.
That is so cool. My goodness, I could totally geek out on this. And
Right? Yeah.
as soon as you mentioned the periodization and, all of that, and like the strength and the cardio, from a massage therapist point of view, a registered equine massage therapist for the horses, that is the kind of stuff I just love because, building not just what the riders want, but what the horses need. And I'm just all about that. So that just sounds really cool.
It's a lot of fun. And it's funny because YTPs kind of had a bad name. They were just like a paperwork exercise that coaches had to do, but they actually, once you get into them, they are pretty fun. I like them.
Well, it certainly sounds by the little tone in your voice that you do a good job at selling them. So that's awesome. Well, when you're passionate about it, how can everybody else not get excited about it as well?
Absolutely.
Okay, Ruth. So over the last few years, you've had some impressive personal accolades. One of horse sports' top 50 influencers in equestrian sport in Canada for 2020, and the Coaching Association of Canada Community NCCP Coach Developer Award. What does recognition like that mean to you professionally and personally? And does it create an extra level of expectation you put on yourself?
I certainly being recognized by my community is it's obviously rewarding. But I genuinely the sense of accomplishment I feel when one of my students has a success is almost it's almost bigger. And I have to be very honest here. I like winning. No, and I'm going to qualify. I love winning. I love winning. But winning has different connotations for different circumstances, right? So watching a horse learn something new and confidently showing it, I mean, that's winning, right? And the smile on a rider's face when they finish that awesome cross-country round, or when they pick up that third place ribbon that they worked so hard for, that's winning. Watching a coach proudly show you their YTP when months ago they couldn't even merge a cell in Excel, that is like that's 100% winning. So for me, I'm very grateful to be acknowledged by the community. Those other things for me, those are such huge rewards. Does it create an extra level of expectation that I put on myself? I don't sleep much because I wake up with a lesson plan or a diagram of the arena that I want to set up in my head, or the way I'm going to make a program better, or the way I'm going to make a lesson more understandable for a student if they maybe didn't get the everything that I was saying. So the pressure I place on myself is to live up to the people that mentored me and the amazing and excellent work that they've done. So yeah, no, I don't think getting awards has placed any extra pressure on me. I place quite a bit on myself, so which is
Well,
okay.
it sounds like your brain is constantly going. Do you keep a little book by the bed so when you wake up in the middle of the night, you can jot these things down?
Yeah, I do. I do actually. And so I tried to go to I bought a tablet and I tried to go all digital with the book and still, I'm right back to, a journal by my bed, and I have a journal by my computer, and I have a journal in the kitchen, and a journal in my bag, and I just yeah, no, it's constant, and I worry that like, and my sister jokes with me all the time. She's like, if you ever get hit by a bus, how are we going to find all of your notes? Because they're everywhere, and I keep saying I'm going to organize them, so.
Oh my goodness. So, can I just ask you? I love what you said about living up to those who have mentored you. Would you be able to share any one or two that left the biggest impact with you and something that you continue to pay it forward with what you learned?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up riding with actually the farm right across the road from me is owned by Jeff and Bridget McKessick. And Jeff was my first coach. And it's funny, there are nights when if I'm teaching out on the cross country course and he's teaching in his sand ring, we can both hear each other coaching. And the similarities in our coaching are they're quite funny. I would say he was my youngest influence as a coach, and the youngest sort of mentor, moving into that coaching realm, and certainly the first person to encourage me to take some formal training. And then my husband and I spent a lot of winters back and forth to Florida, and Peter Gray, who is obviously a Canadian icon in eventing. He taught us so much, and not just about how to ride. He taught us so much about how to run our business, and how a coach should act. And so obviously he's one of my huge mentors. And then a couple of years ago, when COVID happened, I decided that I would do my Master Coach Developer certification.
Yeah.
And in that, I worked with a coach from Coach Association of Canada, Wayne Perreault, and just learned such a tremendous amount from him. And these people, when I have moments when I think, what would Peter do? Or what would Wayne do? Or Kara Whittem, oh my gosh, she used to
Wow.
come to the farm and do dressage lessons for Mark and I. And I have moments when I'm teaching when I think, how would Kara deal with this? And I'm blessed right now to work alongside Ian Miller and Crystal Boylan through Ontario's GRIP program. And my goodness, like talk about two people that have more Olympic and Pan Am accolades to their name than anybody I know. And yet they always have time for a question. And that's, for me, that's coaching, right? You always have time to listen to a question, to think about it. And if you don't know the answer, it's fine. But you're never going to say, you're never going to give an untruth. You're going to tell them you don't know the answer, and you're going to go find the answer or help them find the answer. That's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, this kind of leads us into the next question I have for you about the Grit team, but I had Chris Lott on as a guest. I think it was like episode 34. And she was totally an idol for me growing up and everything. And I'm fortunate and blessed and pinch myself every once in a while because I get to massage horses in her barn. And it's neat because when I find things with her, and this is just sort of in reflection of what you said about asking them questions, but someone and people like as experienced and filled with knowledge, like people like Crystal Ott and Ian are, when I find things on her horses or where we talk through it, it's very analytical for them. They like to understand, or Crystal Ott likes to understand, okay, so this is this, and then how do I transfer that into my riding? And we just have fascinating conversations about how she, as a coach, can take what I've like talked to her about and through our conversation, then put it into the horse. And it, like, I'm just sitting there going, oh my Lord, I can't believe I'm having this opportunity to have this conversation. I could just sit there and listen to her talk all day.
Absolutely. The depth of knowledge, right? And so willing to have that analytical conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
Yes.
amazing.
I think that was one of the things. There's a few really wonderful horse men and women I have had in my life for all the years I've been doing this. And I think that's the one thing that separates the really good ones apart from the ones that, okay, they're there, they're good. But the ones that I've had these amazing experiences with have all been open to conversations with quote unquote little old me, right? Like you'd think after so many years of experience and success that they'd think they know it all, but I think that's what you're doing through your coaching developing or coach developing program is what you said earlier is they all recognize, okay, I don't know it all, and there's always room to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so cool. Well, okay, so the Grit program, I have had a couple of Grit alum on, Anna Swackhammer and Carson Lewis. They came on way at the beginning of Hitting Your Stride. And I'm curious to know what your perspective on the program is at this point and whether the outcomes have met its goals so far.
So my experience with Grit so far, so this was my first year working on the Grit team, and I have had the opportunity over the last 5 or 6 years to go to a bunch of the provinces. I think actually all the provinces so far except for Saskatchewan, which I have booked for next year, so don't worry. And work with provincial sport organizations and horse trials groups, and looking at Ontario Equestrian's GRIT program, it is just such a complete package. It's the most complete program I've seen in terms of that equestrian athlete development anywhere in the country. And the technical expertise that is Ian Miller and Crystal Law Boylan, coupled with the support from a strength and conditioning coach and a mental performance coach from Canadian Sport Institute Ontario, that's outstanding. And the staff at Ontario Equestrian that support this, I mean, it's their passion. They live it, breathe it. I'll get texts at 6 in the morning. It's like we are. It's all in. They are absolutely invested. And interestingly, I'm just going through the process of developing a results tracking and gap analysis for each of the athletes that was in the 2023 program. So in a couple of years, I should be able to answer the question that you just asked
Oh.
as to from a quantifiable point of view, is the program meeting the outcome? So, and it is one of those things that anytime you put an athlete development program in place, you'd like it to have long-term benefits, right? And so we won't really know for a couple of years after tracking whether it is. I can say anecdotally, yeah, 100%, it totally is. One of the interesting things that we did for the last, so although I've only been working with Ontario Equestrian's GRIT program just in 2023, back in 2022, the high performance coach program that I work on and GRIT teamed up to have both sort of coincide at that. So I mentioned that the high performance coaches come together once a year. They do that at the GRIT fall training camp. And the interesting thing about that is then we've got you've got Ian, you've got Crystal, you've got the strength and conditioning coach, you've got a mental performance coach, you've got a dozen high performance coaches from across the country, and you've got the GRIT athletes and their coaches as well, all in the same tent. And so creating that holistic environment where we have those conversations about, I'm watching this rider mechanically. I've got my strength and conditioning coach here. What would I advise from a strength and conditioning point of view for an athlete in this developmental age and stage, that's going to be of long-term benefit for them? And working with the mental performance coach there to say, if I run into something like this with one of my athletes, what do I do? Or how would you tackle this? It's just like, again, we go back to those conversations around, how do I be the best coach for my athletes? They just happen organically in that environment because we have all the right people in the tent. So it's, I look forward to being able to answer the question of whether it is really making a difference from a statistics and quantifiable point of view. But certainly anecdotally, one of the things that I, and it's funny as I teach equestrian specific courses, one of my, and anyone that's taken a course with me knows that if they start talking about their athlete or their rider as a client, I remind them just to change the language. Instead of somebody that I'm making money off out that comes outside my door, let's talk about them as if they're an athlete with no financial gain. And does it change what you're going to prescribe for them in terms of the horse that they purchase, the amount of lessons that they're taking, the horse show that they go to? Think about them as that holistic athlete. And then obviously business and sport collide a little bit in equestrian, but we really, those are the kinds of conversations we get to have in that environment, which is, I'm again pretty lucky to be part of that. And I'm pretty lucky that Equestrian Canada and Ontario Equestrian both came to the table and said, yeah, this is a good idea. We're on board with this. So, because so where those two programs meet is just such a such a great section of that long-term athlete development pathway.
Wow. My goodness. Okay, so maybe I could have you back in a couple of years after the results are in.
There you go. I can send you my gap analysis. It's gonna be all graphy. We can nerd out.
That would be awesome. So, sort of a little side note then here, Ruth. I mean, do you have a history of studying analytics? Are you a natural numbers person? Where does this drive for, finding out all this stuff come from?
So it is so very interesting. On the farm, I am not allowed to do anything with numbers or money. I'm not allowed to handle the money ever. I'm not allowed to do any of the math. I'm terrible at math and numbers, except for when it comes to figuring out whether I'm making incremental gains in training or whether I'm not. And for me, it is that kind of picture of where an athlete's at and where I want them to go to and how I'm closing the gap to get that done. And so, yeah, it is funny. And my family finds it quite hilarious that I do like graphs and numbers when it comes to how an athlete is doing. But when it comes to balancing the books, I'm terrible. So, yeah, there you go.
Stick with your strengths, I guess,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. We say that all the time. Know your strengths, stick with your strengths.
Oh my gosh. And another thing that I think needs to be restated because it's very powerful. And in fact, when you said it, this thing happened in my gut, and I'm like, wow. And that was how you described how the changing of a word can completely change the future of a relationship when you went from don't refer to this person as a client. It's an athlete. And like that is so powerful. So listeners, let that sink in again, because you're right. I mean, that totally changes possibly the intention of the relationship, the goals, who's doing what for who ultimately.
Yep. And we go back to your very first question of today. And what was your motivation for starting riding? I'm drawn back to that all the time when we're having those conversations with athletes, not clients, because I care about what their motivation was. Things aren't always going to be easy as an athlete. But if we're reminded of what their motive and what's your motivation now, and it can change, and that's okay. But really keeping that, and this is a phrase my sister reminds me of all the time, that we are athlete-centered first, coach-driven. So
Ooh.
it's very much the athlete is at the center of our focus, and the coach is there to drive it. It's not my goal.
Yeah.
It is very much the athlete's goal, but I'll help you get there.
Wow. That's awesome. Woo. Okay. So, one of your aims when working with students is to ensure they are following a developmentally appropriate plan to both to achieve their short-term goals and to allow them to continue towards attaining their lifelong goals and achievement in the sport. I'd like to turn that around. How would you say you've done in living up to your own goals that you've set for yourself, and what targets have you set for yourself in the future?
So interesting. When I first started coaching, I think I was 18, and I went to university. I wasn't super engaged in it. And I came home and announced to my parents that I wanted to coach. And I think when I'd announced to them before that I wanted to take a degree in Russian studies so that I could be a spy, they were like, okay, you just carry on. So when I announced that I wanted to coach, they were like, okay, that sounds more realistic. So you need to get trained, you need to get certified. Let's do this. And I remember my dad asking me once I was coaching for a few years, what is your goal as a coach? And I said, I would really, my dream is to have a rider one day finish in the top three at a training level competition. And he was like, yeah, then figure out how you're going to get there and, run at the wall, give it heck. And so, in fact, we have a year-end Christmas awards party, and It is an award that I give out every year at our team Christmas party that reflects on that benchmark of, finishing in the top three at a training level event. And I was looking, so I'm in the process of doing our year-end awards for this year. Since I started coaching, I've given out 145 of those awards.
What?
And
Wow.
so that I, but certainly, and this is like all goals and all benchmarks, they have to evolve and grow over time. So that was where I started. That's what I wanted to achieve as a coach. In terms of supporting athletes in their lifelong enjoyment of the sport, well, you know what I should do? I should do a results track and a gap analysis. I should get out a graph. It's interesting. This week, I was talking about the fact that I was coming on your podcast and just talking about how long she'd been with me, and she reminded me that she's ridden with me for over 22 years. So I
Wow.
can assume, and again, anecdotal, I can assume that she's stayed because she's enjoyed the ride. So, I would say that's long-term enjoyment. What's next for me? Oh gosh, I am having so much fun with working in that coach developer role and working with coaches now. I still have so much to do there, and I guess I haven't set myself a benchmark for what that really tangibly looks like, but I think really there we that HP1 program, we ran 3 years of pilot, and then had to go to Coach Association of Canada to get approval of the program, and back in September, I think they reviewed the whole program and gave it approval. And so now it's a legit thing. And I always said that for me, the coaching pathway, and I hear this all the time, like, I don't know how to get certified. It's so complicated. I don't know what to do first. And I don't think that the pathway should be hard. I think I now don't get me wrong. I think especially getting the high performance coach certification, it should be hard. It should be a goal to achieve, and it should be a challenge. But understanding how to do it shouldn't be the challenge. So being able to work on programs like that and simplify those and make them more understandable and easier to navigate, I think is something that certainly as a benchmark I would carry on doing. But yeah, no, I definitely I, as the As I move forward with goals, I'm quick to reset just a little further ahead. So that may be why I don't sleep at night, though.
Yeah, I love it though. It sounds like we kind of speak the same language that way. And if I can just touch on, you mentioned about, this process that, a lot of coaches out there getting their certification and going through this process that EC has put out there. And I mean, I'm not out there trying to achieve it, but I think it's a wonderful idea. But I do hear a lot of, little grumbles here and there, and oh my God, and this is so hard and everything else. What could you say to those listening that might be on that side of the, oh my God, this is a pain in the butt kind of thing? What could you say to them to kind of help them put their concerns at ease or maybe open up their mind and their eyes a little bit?
I think it's an interesting spot that we're in right now, because we haven't had coach certification be mandatory previous to now. And so now that this is coming to, and it's Sport Canada, it's not EC, we can blame and but it's not really them. I think it's an interesting spot to be in. And again, I go back to this opportunity to learn from other sports. And there's so many cool things out there in that coaching realm, but because we haven't required it, it feels onerous to people. And it feels like we're asking them to do something to prove that they're doing the right thing. Okay, and the coolest one for me is I always get this. Well, I saw a certified coach once and they were terrible. So I'm going to be honest with you, Tracy. I have a driver's license. I'm not Mario Andretti. I'm not a great driver. I've had quite a few little accidents in Fender benders on the farm. So I certainly, I think it's safe to get in a car with me, but I certainly, if we were going to go out and go on the racetrack, I wouldn't put me in the driver's seat, but I have
Sounds
a
like
driver's
a good
license,
plan.
right? And so it is, I think it's an investment. I think it's an investment in your athletes. I think back to our conversation earlier, my mentors in coaching certainly, they didn't ever believe they knew everything. There was always more to learn. And so this is an opportunity for coaches to learn. And I get that it's new and it might be a bit scary because it might reveal that you have a gap.
Yeah.
But it's okay because we're gonna help you close that gap. And it's not scary really. It's this kind of fun opportunity to work together.
Yeah. And I like the fact that you put that you said fun. I mean, I with my life coaching side of things, when I'm working with equestrian individuals, and I'll make a suggestion and I can hear them kind of gulp on the other end of the phone. I'd be like, hey, like let's have fun with this. And I could just see them like, oh, fun. And be like, yes, it can be fun if it all depends on what's going on between your ears.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Mindset, for
Yeah,
sure.
absolutely. Okay. So I love this next question. And I'm looking forward to your answer. Overall, what do you think equestrian athletes do better than other athletes? And what do you think is generally the biggest area for improvement?
So I love that you love this question because I'm totally going to turn it around a little bit. So I'm going to change the question
Okay.
to what do I think equestrian coaches do really well, and what are their biggest areas of improvement?
Okay.
And a little bit because I'm right now sitting in that very coach invested role, and I think we are incredibly creative and incredibly diverse as equestrian coaches. And I think that because one of our athletes only speaks English as a second language, right? Like the horse doesn't speak English. So we have a human athlete that speaks human languages, and we have our horse that doesn't speak human languages. And so teaching them to speak a common language and understand each other to keep them both safe is just we have to be creative, and we have to use lots of different tools and pull in different ideas. And I think that is really I think that's really what sets us apart as equestrian coaches versus multi-sport coaches or skiing coaches. Now I'm sure most skiing coaches would tell me that the skis have a language of their own as well, but I think horses definitely, that's a pretty cool one. In
Yes.
terms of improvement, equestrian coaches, we have a tendency to hold our programs very, very close. So we are very reluctant to allow others to see what we do because we're driven by private industry. And so a lot of the opportunities that I strive to create with the different hats that I wear are just to bring people together and change that norm. Getting coaches to share best practices is really, it's good for the sport. It's good for our athletes. It's good for the horses. It's good for the whole industry. I got asked once, I was teaching a course and someone said to me, doesn't it scare you to share all of your trade secrets with everyone so openly? No, totally, it doesn't. Because I'm already one step. I'm not sleeping anyway, so I'm already one step beyond there, thinking about the next thing I'm going to do. You have to adapt. You have to stay ahead of the curve, and that really, for me, means learning and sharing with others. So it's and it's interesting. I am a big reader, so I was reading a book the other day, and I can't remember the name of it because it's not on my desk because I have too many little journals on my desk. But it is about the rugby team, the All Blacks, and
Ooh.
their sort of the team culture that's created within there. And one of their mantras is "Go for the gap," and really, It's always striving to be just a little bit ahead of the curve. But to do that, I really think we all need to work together and become part of this great community that works together. And that's scary for some people. But I'm an open book. Like, I'm happy to tell you what I do in my program and what works, what I've tried that doesn't work. What I've made money at, what I maybe haven't made. Well, actually, I don't know that part because I'm not allowed to handle money. But if I were able to handle money, I might know that. So, but yeah, I know. I think it's interesting as well. Just to go back to your original question, one of the things I think we do really well in equestrian, or good equestrians do really well, is that empathy side of things. And a lot of I was working on an athlete development matrix with some non-equestrians, and empathy sometimes is viewed as a downfall of an athlete. I don't want to be standing on the start line of a 100-meter sprint and look over at my competitor and think, oh, maybe I should let him win. I wonder if he's having a bad day.
Right.
That's not a it's not a positive attribute in our sport, especially, and I don't know, especially in eventing, but I think especially in eventing. Empathy with our equine partner that does so much for us, I think, is huge. So I would say that that's something that we do really well as equestrian athletes.
Well, I would sure hope so, because I think in order to be successful in an equestrian sport, like truly successful, there has to be a recognition, appreciation, mutual respect, and understanding with your equine partner, or else you just won't be successful.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Wow. Okay. All right, Ruth. If Ruth the rider was under the guidance of Ruth the coach, how do you think that relationship would work out?
I might be my most challenging student to date, although I did coach my husband for quite a long time, so that might have been the most challenging. And I've coached both of my my children, so. I think I have enough tools in my toolkit to deal with someone like me as a student. As a coach, I am a lifelong learner and I consider myself quite coachable. So I would assume that Ruth, the student, would be the same. Now, I one of the things that that I am a big believer in is if I got to a point where the relationship coach athlete wasn't working for one of us, both of us, I feel quite confident as a coach that I would find Ruth the rider the best coach to meet their needs. So I think that's something that in coaching we don't talk about enough. And it's that recognition that maybe the relationship isn't of benefit to the athlete at the moment, and they might need something different. And it doesn't mean that they won't come back to you. But I'm not the expert of all things. You said it brilliantly earlier. But you recognize what you're good at and carry on doing what you're good at. So certainly if Ruth the rider wasn't progressing under my guidance, I would find certainly the coach that could get the best out of her.
Well, it's funny because what you said about, you're a lifelong learner, and who you were as a rider and who you are now might not be that different, but the difference is just a few years of wisdom and experience. So yeah, I think that's kind of cool because, every once in a while along this crazy journey we call life, when things are feeling a little tough, or you're feeling overwhelmed, or maybe not where you should be, or where you think you quote unquote should be, it's nice to kind of stop and do a little journey back through time. And okay, where was I 20 years ago? What were my goals? Well, holy crap, here I am, and I'm still trudging along and loving it. Like, you know what I mean? There's just I encourage my coaching clients to just say, yeah, like just take a look at where you're at and where you were, and give yourself a freaking high five.
Well, and I appreciate, Tracy, that you started this interview with how did you start riding? What brought you there? And then finished, like looped it back to, now if you had to teach you as a little Ruth, what would that look like? That's a pretty nice journey you took me on.
Aw, well, thank you. I really appreciated this conversation, Ruth. I love your energy. I feel like I could sit down with a cup of tea for a couple more hours and just chat.
Anytime you want to talk about YTPs or gap analysis, you let me know. I'm happy to take the time.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I just want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks. You too.
Thank you. So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.